Blog Talk Radio.
More than 75
postal workers, members, held a spirited protest on March 4th, challenging a no-bid deal between the company and the U.S. Postal Service to staff postal counters and staple stores with non-postal people. Okay, so the postal union is
protesting.
20 postal workers are preparing to protest. Members of the Postal Workers Union and community activists plan to rally outside a Staples store on Peachtree Road.
You'll find them outside Staples in the 3500 block of Peachtree Street during the lunch hour. Atlanta will serve as a test market for plans to move postal services into Staples stores. Postal workers and community activists are planning to picket an Atlanta Staples store. They are protesting there because of a plan to move postal services into Staples stores, and that could lead to the closure of some post offices. The Postal Service plans to staff the postal counters with low-wage Staples employees.
People of this community should realize that we're here to stop the sale of the mail. The U.S. mail is not for sale.
Today we are in front of a Staples store, and we're here mainly because of a deal the post office and the Staples have come together with, where they're putting post offices inside the Staples. We are in protest of that due to the fact that the post offices that they have in there are not staffed with postal employees, and by not being staffed with postal employees, it loses the sanctity of the mail.
Staples postal employees do not take an oath for your mail. We have to.
We're looking for a postal experience. You know, you want postal experience people dealing with postal products. If we don't have that, then they're not getting what the customers deserve and what they need dealing with postal products. The post offices are disappearing. They're closing them. They're merging them. And American people want their post office.
We are not trying to shut down Staples stores. We welcome the growth of the United States Postal Service. Any working body, any union would welcome the expansion of its company. We're just simply saying don't have a full-blown post office, miles of postal employees.
The post office belongs to the American people, and it's not for sale. You know, we want the mail to be delivered. We want to be delivered with trained individuals and not just anybody. You know, you start with Staples, next thing you know, it's Walmart, it's, you know, any other stores. Staples can close. And with those stores closing, what happens to the post office? Staples follows that trend. Atlanta was one of the test markets for this project for the Postal Service with Staples. So this is all over because this is going on with all the Staples stores.
The security of the mail must prevail. The post office is part of the Constitution.
Post workers get the job done, and we get the job done the most efficient way possible.
StopStaples.com is trying to petition.
Go to that other article and probably tell us a little more about the history of the post on Ed Schultz.
That's the one I wanted to add. This one here?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was going to play that one.
I'd like to hear that one because it'll probably be more informative.
It's a little longer, but it's very important.
And in the big finish tonight, thanks to Republicans in Congress, the United States Postal Service is in danger of collapse. How nice of them. The Republican philosophy is privatization. We know that. And they are destroying the Postal Service to get their way. The Post Office reported a $15.9 billion loss through their fiscal year ending September 30th, 2012. It's important to keep in mind the Post Office is losing money because of a 2006 law passed in a lame duck session of the Congress by the Republicans. The law requires the post office to pre-fund employees' retirement accounts for the next 75 years in a 10-year window. I wonder if Mitt Romney would say that's a good business plan. These overpayments make up $11 billion of this year's net loss. Now, the other $5 billion is because of the decline in mailing that's taken place in operation, but it would have been manageable. Both of these problems can easily be fixed. In April, the Senate passed a bill allowing the Postal Service to regain $11 billion in overpayments to its retirement account. The bill, of course, went nowhere. Speaker John Boehner in the House, he didn't want anything to do with it. Meanwhile, the revenue problem can be solved by modernizing the Postal Service. The great Bernie Sanders says, here's what we can do about it. Here's the plan. Clearly, the Postal Service has to change. It has to be much more entrepreneurial, much more pro-business, much more pro-consumer. In our state of Vermont, we have many rural post offices. People want to go there to get letters copied. Can't do that. They want to get letters notarized against the law. They want a fishing license. They want a hunting license against the law. There are many areas where the Postal Service can expand, bring in substantially more revenue. And this is breaking news. No tax dollars go to the operation of the Postal Service. That's right. $0. These solutions are simple, but Republicans are against helping the post office because they want to see it eliminated, bust the union, privatize it, make a dollar on the side for their buddies. The longer nothing is done, more jobs are lost and the economy suffers. Currently, the Postal Service has plans to close 260 post offices around the country. So that's what's happening to the one in your town. This means that an additional 35,000 postal jobs are at risk if nothing is done by this session, lame duck session of the Congress. Republicans' inaction on this issue is absolutely shameless. They've had all year to come to the table to work with the Democrats, but of course they haven't done it. They are hell-bent on seeing the U.S. Postal Service die, even if it means destroying a great American institution. In the process, they don't care. They want it privatized. It's wrong. Let's turn to Greg Bell, Vice President of the American Postal Workers Union. Mr. Bell, good to have you with us tonight. What is the number one thing that can be done right now to save the Postal Service as we know it?
Well, the number one thing that must be done is to eliminate the unrealistic mandate that the Postal Service currently has to pre-fund future retiree health care benefits for a 75-year period within a 10-year period. That's the number one. That's the main cause of the Postal Service problems. Matter of fact, that is the cause. If you remove that liability, the Postal Service, as you stated, would be able to assume the responsibility without any type of assistance or any type of additional funds.
And I want to emphasize here that this is going to financially butcher small business in America, in rural America. What are they going to do? Their shipping costs are going to go through the roof. Their line item is going to go off the page because all of the privatization is not going to be able to cover and service rural America, which the post office does right now for many of these companies. Mr. Bell, it's good to have you with us tonight. It's a story that I want to tell over and over again. I want this lame duck session of the Congress to do something about this. It is unfair. Mitt Romney would never run any of his businesses like that. That's what you Republicans need to know. That's the Ed Show. I'm Ed Schultz on this Friday night. The Rachel Maddow Show starts right now.
You know, I agree with him fully, but the only thing I disagree with him on is that Mitt Romney would never run a company like that. Mitt Romney was his company, his Bain Capital, were the major financiers for Staples, okay?
Mm.
And it wouldn't surprise me that Mitt Romney and Bain Capital had some kind of manipulation with Obama or whatever the administration was, or Congress or something, to be able to get the post office to satellite an office in Staples.
Hmm.
They got to save Staples somehow because Staples is going under, right? They're closing 500 stores for crying out loud, right? And they're going to still close more. I mean, they're the Radio Shack of office supplies. You know what I mean?
I think they have too many.
They got too many offices. Stores, and you can buy everything online. So where the hell do you need? You know what I mean?
You don't need
these brick and mortar stores anymore. Which is a shame. Right. Oh, we get Larry is with us. Hang on one second.
Oh, that's good. We'll tell him we were just talking about the post office.
Hello, Larry. Are you with us?
I am. Good to be with you.
How are you?
We were just talking about the U.S. post office.
Yeah, we're trying to save the post offices here and the postal union.
I love the post office.
So do we.
Yeah, we do too. Man, it's they just did you we were just playing a video an audio piece about the postal worker union striking in front of protesting in front of Staples in Atlanta.
What they're doing is
there's a satellite office. They're putting a post office. They put a post office without postal employees in
using low-paid staple employees.
Yep.
Yes, you know.
I saw that. Yeah, I didn't hear your audio, but I saw that story.
Yeah,
yeah.
Pretty bad.
That's very upsetting.
Well, you know, this is how the bad guys are trying to chip away at the middle class.
Oh, yeah. It's just a bad trend. Just a very, and Staples is closing a lot of stores anyway.
They're closing 300 or 400 stores, right, already.
Yeah.
The Radio Shack of office supplies, you know? God.
Right, right.
Radio Shack's closed like 2,000 or 3,000 stores around the country already.
So many of those, you can buy so many of their products online, you know, especially office supply store.
And, you know, we played another video, a little audio piece of Ed Schultz. You know, he was saying that Mitt Romney would, it's about the Postal Service and so on, but he said Mitt Romney would never use this business plan, all right? But he would use this business plan because Mitt Romney's Bain Capital was the group that funded and started gave this startup money to Staples. You know, it wouldn't surprise me that somehow had a hand in this thing. You know.
Well, sure. And if you ever listen to the Staples CEO, you know, anti Obama, anti middle class, anti union. You know, the guy is a conservative who came out for Romney. So, you know, they all pat each other's back and give each other money.
Oh, they sure do.
Yeah, it's just downright sick, you know.
So you've been on the road today, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm actually leaving Scenic Shelton, Connecticut. We just, our paraprofessionals just spoke in front of the Board of Education. We've been, you know, another sign of the times. We reached a tentative agreement for 44 really hardworking, dedicated paraeducators, and the Shelton Board of Education is this high-priced attorney who decided to ignore the tentative agreement and said we never signed anything, even though we have the signature. So we are there to kind of shame the Board of Education and tell them they need to ratify the contract, just like our workers did.
So how did things go?
Well, you know, the Board of Education was stoned. They had members sat stone-faced. I think they were a little bit embarrassed. But we'll see what happens. We had to file a legal complaint, and we'll see where it goes. But, you know, I was talking with the our para educators. You know, we in the school systems, you teach the kids to honor your word. You know, to be a person of your word, to honor the process, and, you know, employers routinely dishonor the process, dishonor the law, and, you know, sometimes that example becomes more glaring in an educational setting than, you know, in another workplace setting. So
yeah.
You can play to that a lot.
Has the media picked this up at all?
Briefly, another, yeah. You know, post.
Larry, if you can speak a little closer into the phone, maybe. Are you driving?
Yeah, I am. I'm going to try to pull over so you'll hear me better.
Oh, okay. I don't want to get you picked up there. But.
Yeah. Got a little better?
Oh, yeah. That's a lot better. Yeah, my question was, has the media, the Connecticut media, responded to this at all?
No, not really. We put out press releases. I called reporters, but the New Haven Register, you know, the corporate chain doesn't cover Shelton. Connecticut Post hasn't done anything with it. It's the online paper may cover it, but so we've got it on our Facebook. I'll get it on our website, and we'll just push it out the best way we can.
Yeah,
that's
really a
do.
Shame
yeah.
that it's not
yeah.
being covered by the Connecticut media, because it's an important thing, very important. I mean, people have to realize what's happening to our employees.
Yeah.
It's
Well, don't you think it's all kind of related, though? You can't get the press to cover this stuff. You know, the corporate chains own the papers. It's really hard to get your word out. I mean, that's why you're doing your show. Thanks, Liz.
They're exactly right. No one seems to have a voice unless you're speaking corporate speak. And they sure
right.
have plenty of voice. They're on all the stations.
Oh, they own them all. It's just terrible. I mean,
I can't imagine how frustrating it must be for someone like you who's trying desperately to get the word out.
Yeah, you know what surprises me? You know what troubles me, really? It's like even groups like NPR, all right? They're totally sewn up by Pew Foundation and Koch Brothers. Okay, the Pew Foundation is totally anti-union, and so is the Koch Foundation, of course, the Koch Brothers.
And Pew Charitable Trust.
And that's what we're dealing with right now. I mean, it's absolutely
right.
Staggering. I mean, they have got the entire media sewed up, you know.
They've bought the whole thing. I mean, it's really scary. It's we're bordering on the thought control age.
Yeah.
We're bordering on the what?
Bordering on what?
We're bordering on the thought control age, where the bad guys own the media, and the message is not getting out there.
No, it's not. And I mean, we're trying. I mean, everybody is trying to do something, but it's like, but again, you know, here we go. You know, like the biggest online programs, believe it or not, in the country, they're not NPR, they're not news related, or they are guys like Rush Limbaugh, Glenn Beck, okay? But believe it or not, the biggest online programs are either sports related or they are daytime soap related. Imagine that.
Yeah, people want
daytime soap operas. Daytime entertainment, whatever it is, and sports. Those are the biggest, the highest rated programs, not only on Nielsen television ratings, but also on online networks. Is that amazing or not?
It is, but I'm also not surprised. It's bread and circuses, right? Give the people what they want.
But nobody wants to hear anything that of any, you know, of substance. We have loyal listeners who've been with us for years, and that's wonderful, and they really support our show. But you know, it's like, it's just amazing to me how, you know, people just try to be so they ignore news, you know, and then when you bring them the news, you know, they get mad about it because they say that's
right.
not, you know, like. Like what the stuff that's on AFL-CIO blog. Amazing information. Great information.
It is. I noticed that. Yeah, it's incredible.
Yeah, great writing, good information. But, geez, you know, I'll bet you don't get more than a few thousand, I'll bet they don't get more than a few thousand visitors, you know, a day to it.
No.
You know what I mean?
And that's part of the problem. You know, people's attention spans are, I guess they're limited, but I also think that, there's been a retreat to having, you know, fair coverage in the news. And like you say, it's the Koch brothers, it's the Pew Foundation, you know, with the Walton family, who also funds public radio and TV, you know. So, you know, fundamentally anti-worker, anti-middle-class organizations are really gaining control of these outlets and preventing the messages from getting out, too.
Oh, yeah, and if you listen to any broadcast on NPR, I mean, forget about it. There are no national union or national labor issues brought up or any kind of thing that would be controversial nationally. It's all international stuff, or it's all, you know, globalist, international news, or
you don't have anything that directly affects the lives of ordinary people.
No, and it's a total blitz. You know, and you might hear more about, you know,
what's happening in Crimea than you do what's happening here.
Exactly, you know. And
David, the debate is narrowed to, you know, these argumentative sound bites that have no bearing on reality.
I just wanted to jump ahead a little bit. Richard Trumka tried to get Jim DeMint, who's the president of the Heritage Foundation, to debate him. And he refused on the minimum wage, on raising
right.
the minimum wage. I think it was great that he reached out, but the guy wouldn't accept the challenge.
These guys are so afraid, on the right, they're so afraid to have a real debate. In some ways, you don't blame them because they own Fox News, they own all the outlets, so they're emboldened and they're afraid to actually have a real kind of small-D democratic debate.
Oh, yeah.
But they know that they can't stand up to someone on the other side because their news is manipulated news. Their stand is in a manipulated
Correct.
Stand. And they can't stand up to facts.
Well,
if
you ever listen to Rush Limbaugh is hysterical because they screen all the calls coming in and he refuses to talk to a liberal, okay, or anybody who even questions him, okay?
Right.
Is dogma, you know, and that's what these guys are doing. DeMint and all these other think tanks, the Heritage Foundation, you know, is a great thing. Yeah, but it's like to me, what's happening is the voice. It's so astounding. It's so amazing that to see the restriction, not only that what they've done. Since October, and they warned that this would happen, but they started to bottleneck the internet, all right, and they started to restrict the internet, all right, NSA and the United States and all the servers and so on, they've all to restrict the internet. So, and they passed this bill in October of last year. I forget the name of it, but it's a censoring the internet bill, you know. And believe it or not, it was signed by Lieberman and sponsored by Lieberman and Al Franken and all the people that were in back then, you know. And all the liberal senators wanted to, in fact, Lieberman said that he wanted an internet law. He wanted the internet to be like China's, all right?
That was about
10
years ago.
No, it was just a few years ago.
Maybe five.
He's only been out of office since last year.
Well, it was when he was in office that he said that.
He had
gone on a trip to China, and he came back waxing poetic about the fact about China and our country should be more like them. I was horrified.
I know.
God forbid.
So mad.
And that's scary, but that's the way a lot of these politicians and certainly the corporate community think. You know, they want it to be.
The frightening thing is it wasn't. What I did is I posted all of the senators on my own website. I posted all the senators that voted for the internet restriction censorship bill. Believe it or not, 3/4 of them were liberal senators.
Well, and that's the problem is that they get, you know, they get swayed too, and they get pressured, and especially on issues like this that the public doesn't read about too often, it's not well covered. My theory too is that, it's not just the trade bills; it's always like these telecommunication bills. This is the legislation where a lot of bad stuff happens, and people just aren't paying that much attention. So the consequences end up being really grave in terms of, you know, monopolies being fomented and consumers being hurt. It's really bad stuff. And unfortunately, you're right. A lot of progressive-minded elected officials get either out of ignorance or whatever, just don't, or they don't care. They vote wrong, too.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember back in 2007, they voted in the Mind to the Thought Control Act, okay? I mean, they actually have an act now that is they actually have a bill and they passed it and I think Bush signed it into law that they could arrest you based on your thoughts. All right, if you know whatever you put out there. All right, whatever you put out on the internet or radio or talk about or whatever, it actually passed. And it totally floored me. In fact, you have a copy of my book. I think I put it in there, a copy of that. But the amazing thing is that they still, all the things we're seeing now, all the things that are happening now is just more and more and more restrictions. And a recent interview with Edward Snowden.
Did you happen to see that, Larry?
Yeah.
I read a transcript, though. I read news stories
about
it.
Yeah, he said the worst is yet to come.
No doubt about it.
Yeah, the worst is yet to come.
He didn't even release the worst yet,
The worst yet,
I thought, what could be worse than what he's already told us?
Imagine that. Yeah.
Well, that's the thing. All this stuff is in the dark of night. It is done by stealth, and I don't doubt that we haven't seen the worst, actually.
It's really frightening. But, I wanted to ask you, what do you think about this, about the minimum wage thing? I'm total support of it, but for it to go to 2017 to reach $10,
$10 next year.
It should be now. That $10.
Oh, I agree. Look, my school of thought is this. Obviously, like you, I agree there should be a minimum wage increase. That's obvious.
Yeah.
My problem with it is it actually ought to be more like it. An ideal minimum wage, first of all, should be at least half the average manufacturing wage. So we're talking a real, true minimum wage ought to be, $15, $17 an hour minimum. It ought to be indexed to the cost of living. The corporate CEOs, all the big wigs, everybody else gets their cost of living increases, but these poor workers at the bottom, and they're working full time. These aren't, college kids anymore. These are college graduates who can't find work in the economy. So you need to have probably double what it is, index it to the cost of living, and couple it with laws to make it easier to organize unions and take away the unfair advantage that the businesses have when it comes to trying to bust union drives. We got to have an honest adult discussion about why things are so bad in this country, and one of the reasons they're so bad is people can't form unions.
And people,
so,
the
yeah,
reason so bad is that people have no money to spend. What they're doing is they're killing the goose that laid the golden egg. In order for a country to boom, people have to have money to spend.
You got it.
But they don't seem to get that.
Another horrible thing. I wish you would look into this too, because what's happening to the homeless people in this country?
Yeah.
They're being swept away. They're being picked up off the streets, and they're being put into FEMA camps, for crying out loud. They're taking them away. They don't have shelters for them and whatnot. However, they've built this incredible network of FEMA camps, okay, where they're doing that. They're not, instead of, it's amazing. The United States has over 2 million incarcerated people, all right, with the largest prison industrial complex in the world, all right, and yet people make more money for this government and for corporations incarcerated than they do working as free individuals. Okay, the incentive to incarcerate people in this country is greater than the incentive to have them go free and work, and paid a normal wage. Is that incredible or no?
Look, there's a grim joke that, from the civil rights movement that, even slaves had jobs.
Right.
when we talk, it all goes, you know, we keep talking about it, but it has to be said, you know, the Pew Foundation, the Koch brothers, the Walton family, if they could get people to work for free as indentured servants, they would. There is no greed that's not enough for these guys, and that's what's happening to this country and why it's going downhill so fast. Like Lila said, they're killing the middle class.
Oh, boy, they sure are.
Decimating.
You know, well, I read the other day that, you know, working poor is $34,000, they're earning $34,000 a year, and they can hardly put food on the table.
That's right. It's so expensive to live, you know, and, you know, you talk about homeless people, a lot of people end up on the streets because housing is so expensive. You can't, you know, try living in Fairfield County. You know, and again, but the narrative is our economy's been hijacked by, you know, firefighters and teachers and paraprofessionals and plow drivers. And that's a, you know, wrong, immoral narrative, but that's what's out there. We've got to combat it.
It's very difficult to combat that, though. Very, very difficult.
Yeah. No doubt. You know, no doubt about it. That's what we're up against.
Oh, so hard. And I certainly give you guys a lot of credit for all that you do. Every single day you get out there, you're trying to fight for people.
Right,
but it's very, very tough. I mean, I don't think I've ever spoken to you when you haven't been either on the road or at a meeting, or going to a meeting, and it's
having come back from a meeting,
I often think about you in the snow and the bad weather, and I say to myself, gee, I wonder if Larry's on the road tonight.
See, well, the good news is I treated myself to a four-wheel drive vehicle this year, so I feel a lot better when I'm stuck out of it. But again, you know what, you go to the snowstorms, and you know where you guys live up in the Northwest Corridor, you know, it's, you know, those are public works guys who are going around the clock keeping the roads clean. So, you know, it's public employees who keep things going in this country. And, yeah, you know, that. So, you know, you got to be motivated, and you guys are motivated to fight back because you know the truth. You know what's happening in this country. And you know what lies are being told.
Yeah, I'd like to see a little appreciation for the people that do work so hard. You know, when I know that I get to work because the roads are plowed, and I was at the Y one day, and I got out of my car at the same time another woman got out of her car, and I was saying, oh, gee, I was so happy to get into work this morning. The road was done so beautifully, and she asked me where I lived and, you know, where I worked, and I told her, and she said, thank you very much. I did that road this morning.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
I said, good. I'm glad to. I didn't realize that they had women plow drivers. She said, oh, yeah, we do a lot of work. It was really funny to have that experience because you don't often know who those people are. You just know that you're pretty happy that they've been on the road before you. And they deserve a lot of credit, especially this winter.
Well, look at that. Did you see that fire rescue? The guy, the construction worker that fell off the burning building, and the firefighter caught him. You see that one? The news today. I forget where. I think it was out west where they. I think it was in California or someplace where the hotel blew up and went on fire. It was being constructed.
I didn't see that.
Construction worker left in the building, and he happened to be—he was climbing out of the building. And he was dangling on a balcony, and a firefighter on a ladder, got hold of him. The guy jumped down to the balcony, and the guy got him and pulled him out of the ladder. And then, in a minute, he pulled him on the long ladder. The entire building just fell, you know, on top of him. They missed him by like about inches, you know.
It was an unbelievable save. They do such wonderful work. I mean, you have to be so brave to do that.
Holy cow. Yeah.
And we thank them with layoffs and cutting their pensions and privatization and, you know, all the bad stuff. It's we're in a bad place, no doubt about it. Dangerous place, I should say.
Yeah.
different than how we treat the vets, you know, the veterans. For God's sake, it's horrible, you know?
I was never a pro-war person, but I am
right.
a pro-take care of people.
When they
come home.
And
you
take
just...
care of them when they're there. I mean, you know the amazing thing? Over 900,000 veterans, all right? Not veterans, military people are on food stamps.
Right. Unacceptable. Right.
Isn't that ridiculous?
They get recruited to fight, and then they are
collecting
like,
food stamps.
Yeah.
They're not paid
enough. No, look at they don't get good medical care. They don't get treatment for post-traumatic stress. They're
terrible.
Totally ignored. And, you know, one of the terrible ironies, of course, of that war criminal Bush was the fact that we got into these messes out in Iraq and Afghanistan, and we've done very little. Walter Reed Hospital was a mess. You know, we've done very little to help the guys, men and women, returning from those conflicts. And they can't think of a greater insult.
Where the hell is Obama now? You know, where's Obama been?
Yeah,
you know?
You're right.
Hey, he hasn't done crap for the vets, as far as we can tell, except his wife's walking around saying, oh, we love the vets. But, you know,
both
I mean, Walter Reed is in bad shape as ever. And then Newington, they just found Newington VA to be full of problems. Okay?
Yeah.
You know, they love to pound the drums for war and conflict, but then they don't want to take care of these men and women when they get home. And, you know, that's criminal.
Oh, I think so, too. I think it's horrible.
But, you know, Larry, we got to thank you again because, you know, we appreciate everything you guys do.
Oh, thank you. It's always great to talk with you, and I'm glad you had me on. And we'll have a lot to talk about next month.
I hope so because I know you're on the road there and you stop, so get home safely.
Thank you. Great to talk
All right.
to you guys.
Yeah,
okay.
nice
Be
to
well.
Talk to you, Larry. Good night.
Good night, Larry. Thanks.
That was Larry Dorman, Public Affairs Coordinator for AFSCME Council 4 out of New Britain, Connecticut. He's always on the road. He's always fighting for his union is always fighting for the middle class, trying to get better wages.
You also go to his website, council4.org, and Larry puts that up every month, and you know keeps it going.
And you can read about what's happening in the union. But you must remember, folks, that when union people are paid well, you're paid well too. If you're not in the union,
that's right. That's
because
right.
everybody benefits from. Union workers
and
union representation.
You know, you always get these people that think they can kiss ass their way up the line. You know, well, you know, the only way they get there is because you got a whole bunch of union people that are stuck to it and have, you know, have fought and protested
every contract,
and all of a sudden you get these, you know, these other clowns, you know, who come in and say, oh, they don't need the union. I got the money. You know.
So they'd find pretty fast it'd be sinking down the ladder.
And they find the minute they stub their toe, they're out the door because they're not union, all right? So, you know, get on with it. And, you know, support your unions, for crying out loud. Support them.
Support the post office.
And support the post office, yeah, absolutely. The U.S. post office is, you know, incredibly important.
And they're getting such a bad rap.
Yeah, exactly. It's wrong. It's just wrong. And I wanted to...
We have in our small town, we have a great post office. It's always been wonderful.
Yeah, you got guys that are, you know...
Been there a long time.
Yeah,
they know who you are.
I mean, they're
friendly.
Stuff out. I mean, they do. These guys work hard. And, you know, when you're in a small town, like I said, you know everybody, and everybody knows you, and you know everybody's business when you're a postal service.
You
see all their mail coming in and out. But... It's like, you know, and they do take an oath. You know, they take an oath of office, you know, to be a postal worker.
Well, they should. And I think they should be allowed to expand, as that guy said, Bernie Sanders, you know, they should be selling, like, hunting licenses.
Oh, they should be given
They could do all those things, and I think it would be very successful.
And it should be a quasi-governmental thing, and we should subsidize the postal workers, you know, but if they don't need it, why why are we making it so miserable for them to exist? All right?
Because somebody else wants it.
That's
why.
Exactly. You know, they want it in corporate hands. They want it. The you know, FedEx and UPS and everybody else wants it. All right? And instead, you know, they're just driving it into the ground. And let's stop this. You know, let's stop this madness and help the Postal Service and help unions. This was probably one of the most stupid things I ever heard anybody say.
What's this?
Harry Reid. I mean, you know.
Isn't it time for him to retire?
Yeah, the guy's got to go, man. He just, you know. Harry Reid says, Obamacare is delayed because people are not educated about how to use the Internet.
Well, how about the site
as
lousy?
He's not blaming the site that's lousy. He's not blaming. He's blaming the people.
Naturally,
and he's not blaming the fact that nobody in their right mind wants to get into Obamacare. And the only people that are going into Obamacare are the people that are afraid they're going to be fined or imprisoned or some other god-awful thing if they don't take it, you know. So I want to go to this. It's difficult getting it up here. Okay. On Wednesday, Obama administration officials announced a two-week extension in the deadline to enroll in the Affordable Care Act or face a penalty defined as a tax. Asked about this delay in the implementation of ACA on Wednesday, Senator Harry Reid said that there has been no delay. He added that some of the users who experienced problems with the website early on need more time, partially because people are not educated about how to use the Internet.
How about that the website didn't work?
He says there's no hiccup or delay, Reid insisted. We had hundreds of thousands of people who tried to sign up and didn't get through. What does that mean? Okay, there's no hiccup. Yeah, and then he says we had hundreds of thousands of people who tried to sign up and didn't get through. Related, there are some people who are not like my grandchildren who can handle everything so easily on the Internet, we continue. And these people need a little extra time. He added that many people, like a 63-year-old woman who was recently profiled on radio, public radio, was not educated on how to interact with online tools. All right? But, you know, the insanity of that is, all right?
I don't think he knows anything about the
I don't
Internet.
Think he knows how to use the Internet.
That's
okay?
What
and that's
sounds
probably
like
what
to me.
He's got staff members and everybody else.
Doing
to,
it for him.
He probably doesn't
he's just
even
a
have
mouthpiece.
A, he probably doesn't even have a, probably can't even type, you know? Let me just play this little piece here. Harry Reid.
But when they do have these hiccups or have these delays, doesn't that give the other side fodder?
There's no hiccup or delay. We have hundreds of thousands of people who tried to sign up and they didn't get through. There was a wonderful piece on public radio a couple of days ago. Connecticut. They're doing extremely well with health care. And what they've done is set up a couple of stores that people can come in and get their health care. It's worked out very well. And listening to that piece reminds me of why we had to extend this time. There are some people who are not like my grandchildren who can handle everything so easily on the Internet. And these people need a little extra time. It's not the example they gave is a 63-year-old woman came in to the store and said, I almost got it. Every time I just about got there, it would cut me off. We have a lot of people just like this. No, it's through no fault of the Internet, because people are not educated.
No fault of
the
Internet.
So this is not any...
No fault of the Internet. He said he got there, and then they would cut him off, and that's exactly what was happening every time. The guy is
really
stupid.
I don't think he knows anything.
And, you know, you can tell, I mean, it's obvious, you can tell what he listens to, NPR.
And he doesn't go on the Internet because you know that you get cut off.
Exactly. You know, this is kind of an interesting thing that came up. And I've said this before and I've said it again, but we learned many years ago that Gloria Steinem was a CIA informant.
Yeah, I was shocked when I found that.
And we learned this a number of years ago through working with or talking with the interviewing John McManus, remember, wrote
yep.
the book on William Buckley and so on.
How the CIA used feminism to destabilize society.
This is from Australia Matters. This is dot com. This
Henry
is
Mako, PhD,
yeah.
written in 2002.
Yeah. In the 1960s, the elite media invented second-wave feminism as a part of the elite agenda to dismantle civilization and create a new world order. Since writing these words last week, I was discovered that before she became a feminist leader, Gloria Steinem worked on for the CIA, spying on Marxist students in Europe and disrupting their meetings. She became a media darling due to her CIA connections. Ms. Magazine, which she edited for many years, was indirectly funded by the CIA. Okay.
Just like the Buckley's magazine.
Exactly. Yeah, National Review, funded by the CIA. He was a CIA agent.
That's right.
Steinem has tried to suppress this information unearthed in the 1970s by a radical feminist group called Red Stockings. In 1979, Steinem and her powerful CIA-connected friends, Catherine Graham of the Washington Post, the Ford Foundation President Franklin Thomas, and prevented Random House from publishing it in Feminist Revolution. Nevertheless, the story appeared in the Village Voice on May 21, 1979. While Steinem was always pretended that she had been a student radical. When I was in college, I was in the McCarthy era, she told Susan Mitchell in 1997. And that made me a Marxist. Her bio blurb in June 1973, Ms. Magazine states Gloria Steinem had been a freelance writer all of her professional life. Ms. Magazine is her first full-time salaried job.
Not true. Raised in an impoverished, dysfunctional family in Toledo, Ohio, Steinem somehow managed to attend Elite Smith College, Betty Friedan's alma mater. After graduating in 1955, Steinem received a Chester Bowles student fellowship to study in India. Curiously, an internet search reveals that this fellowship has no existence apart from Gloria Steinem. No one else has received it. In 1958, Steinem was recruited by CIA's Cord Myers to direct an informal group of activists called the Independent Research Service. This was part of Myers' Congress for Cultural Freedom, which created magazines like Encounter and Partisan Review to promote a left liberal chic to oppose Marxism. Steinem attended communist-sponsored youth festivals in Europe, published a newspaper, reported on other participants, and helped to provoke riots. One of Steinem's CIA colleagues was Clay Felker. In the early 1960s, he became an editor at Esquire and published articles by Steinem, which established her as a leading voice for women's lib. In 1968, a publisher of New York Magazine, he hired her as contributing editor and then editor of Ms. Magazine in 1971. Warner Communication puts up almost all the money, as though it only took 25% of the stock. Ms. Magazine's first publisher was Elizabeth Forsling Harris, a CIA-connected PR executive who planned John Kennedy's Dallas Motorcade route. No wonder he was killed. Despite its anti-establishment image, Ms. Magazine attracted advertising from the cream of corporate America. It published ads for IPT at the same time as women political prisoners in Chile were being tortured by Pinochet after a coup inspired by the U.S. conglomerate and the CIA. Steinem's personal relationships also belie her anti-establishment pretensions. She had a 9-year relationship with Stanley Potlinger, a Nixon Ford assistant attorney general, credited with stalling FBI investigations into the assassinations of Martin Luther King and the ex-Chilean foreign minister, Orlando Lavalle. In the 1980s, she dated Henry Kissinger. Ugh! For more details, see San Francisco researcher
Dave Emery.
You're
not going to tell me she's not right up the ass of the CIA?
I guess not.
Henry Kissinger.
Ugh! Our main misconception about the CIA is that it serves U.S. interests. In fact, it has always been the instrument of a dynastic international banking and oil elite Rothschild, Rockefeller, and Morgan, coordinated by the Royal Institute for International Affairs in London and the U.S. branch, the Council for Foreign Relations. It was established and peopled by blue bloods from the New York banking establishment and graduates of Yale University's secret pagan Skull and Bone Society. Our current president, his father and grandfather fit this profile. That was, it's in Bush. That's because it was written
Bushes,
in 202.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
The agenda of this international cabal is to degrade the institutions and values of the United States in order to integrate it into a global state that it will direct through the United Nations. In its 1947 founding charter, the CIA is prohibited from engaging in domestic activities. However, this has never stopped it from waging a psychological war on the American people. The domestic counterpart of the Congress for Cultural Freedom was the American Committee for Cultural Freedom. Using foundations as conduits, the CIA controlled intellectual discourse in the 50s and 60s, and I believe continues to do so today. In Cultural Cold War, Francis Stoner Saunders estimates that 1,000 books were produced under the imprint of a variety of commercial and university presses with covert subsidies.
The CIA's Project Mockingbird involved a direct infiltration of the corporate media, a process that often included direct takeover of major news outlets. By the early 1950s, writes Deborah Davis in her book Catherine the Great, the CIA owned respected members of the New York Times, Newsweek, CBS, and other communication vehicles, plus stringers, 400 to 600 in all. In 1982, the CIA admitted that reporters on the CIA payroll were acted as case officers to agents in the field. Philip Graham, publisher of the Washington Post, who ran the operation until his suicide in 1963, boasted that you could get a journalist cheaper than a good call girl for a couple of $100 a month.
I was born in 1949. Idealists in my parents' generation were disillusioned when the communist dream of universal brotherhood turned out to be a shill for brutal despotism. My own generation may discover that our best instincts have also been manipulated and exploited. There is evidence that the 60s drug counterculture, the civil rights movement, and the anti-war movement, like feminism, were CIA-directed. For example, the CIA has admitted setting up the National Student Association as a front in 1947. In early 1950s, the NSA opposed the attempts of the House Un-American Activities Committee to root out communist spies. According to Phil A.G. Jr., NSA officers participated in the activities of the SNCC. I'm not sure what that is.
The Militant Civil Rights Group.
Oh, and Students for a Democratic Society, a radical peace group.
Amazing, huh?
Well, we had many members of
the Students. Yeah, they set that thing up, is that.
Now, those two priests were involved, those radical priests were involved
in
that. The Berrigans. Yeah. According to Mark Ribling, the CIA also may have used Timothy Leary.
Yeah.
Certainly the agency distributed LSD to Leary and other opinion makers in the 60s. Leary made a generation of Americans turn away from active participation in society and seek fulfillment from within. In another example of the CIA's use of drugs to interfere in domestic politics, Gary Reb describes how in the 1980s the CIA flooded black ghettos with cocaine.
Okay, and not only that was George Bush's idea, by the way. He was a director.
Yeah, he's a horrible man.
Now the other thing is, Preston Nichols, as well as George Dixon, told us that Timothy Leary during the 70s and 80s was still involved with the Montauk Project. And he was doing mind control experiments with LSD. That's where he came out of.
Was he also involved with Scientology?
God, I don't know if he was or not, but he was involved with the with LSD.
Yeah.
He was involved with the projects, the Montauk Project, which
too.
Mind control.
Yeah.
And that's why he became, where he was. I won't attempt to analyze the CIA's motivation except to suggest that they have in common. They demoralized, alienated, and divided Americans. The elite operates by fostering division and conflict in the world. Thus, we don't realize who the real enemy is. For the same reason, the CIA and elite foundations also fund the diversity and multicultural movements. Feminism has done the most damage. There is no more fundamental yet delicate relationship in society than male and female. On it depends the family, the red blood cell of society, and nobody with the interest of society at heart would try to divide men and women. Yet the lie that men have exploited women has become the official orthodoxy. Men love women, his first instinct to nurture a husband and see her thrive. When a woman is happy, she is happy, blah, 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 blah. Okay, so women's oppression is a lie. Okay, sex roles were never as rigid as feminists would have it us believe, but...
My mother had a successful business in the 1950s importing watch straps from Switzerland. When my father's income increased, she was content to quit and concentrate on the children. Women were free to pursue careers if they wanted to. The difference was that their role as wife and mother was understood and socially validated as it should be. Until Gloria Steinem came along and the CIA.
That's kind of an interesting thing. And, she was friends with, she was, God,
got a taste in men. Horrible.
Can you imagine? She dated Henry Kissinger.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. Well, anyway.
Shows what she was.
Anyway, that's horrible, isn't it? I'm going to, this guy inspires me, and,
Karen McKenna.
Yeah, well, George was the one who turned me on to him, and his, do you know who he is?
I have heard things.
He was a philosopher. He was a big pot smoker,
mm-hmm.
and was a giant guy in the 60s and 70s and 80s, but he said things that people made that meant a lot. He says, reclaim your mind and get it out of the hands of the cultural engineers who want to turn you into a half-baked moron, consuming all this trash that's being manufactured out of the bones of a dying world.
Yeah.
Man, is he right on that?
Yep.
Yeah. So anyway, folks, I want to thank you for joining us tonight. I hope you enjoyed the interview with Larry and got something out of the news we gave you. And please support unions if you're in one.
And support the
post office. God almighty.
That's my post office.
Support the post office. All right. They're good folks there. And support them. So anyway, have a good night, folks.
Good night, folks.
We'll talk to you tomorrow. Maybe we'll talk to you tomorrow. If not, we'll see you next week. Good night, everybody.